Welcome to the 24/7 Sports College Football Podcast with your hosts, Chip Patterson and Barton Simmons. The ultimate insider's guide from signing day to the national championship game and everything in between. CBS Sports presents the 24/7 Sports College Football Podcast.
Thank you very much, Big Voice in the Sky. Yes, this is time. I mean, this is a bringing it home. These locks are going to take us all the way through the college football playoffs. We might come up with a friendly wager for the college football playoff national championship game between us. Certainly, we will find a way to preview that game in many ways here on the 24/7 Sports College Football Podcast. But Barton Simmons, Tom Fornelli, gentlemen, we've had some dramatic shakeups in the standings.
What happened?
Our regular season champion is in free fall.
I am battered and beaten and bloodied, just crawling through shards of glass on this bowl run here. This is a mess right now for me.
Losing 4 units on Boston College as we sit here to record on Thursday morning, and losing 5 units on Missouri drags Barton down to negative 12 units.
We're gonna find out who the real supporters and believers are here pretty soon, because I'm about to go on a historic run. And you know, some people who jumped off the train, they're not gonna be able to make that money when I do.
Oh, it's coming today. The train. You get ready. It's coming. Get on it. And you can get on later. Where's my Herm Edwards sound?
That's right. That's right.
Okay, so Tom currently is our a big day yesterday. Florida State, Iowa, and the Texas-Missouri under. You lost just 1 unit on having to choose between your
children.
Son, your children. That puts you at 14 units up. And Chip, I got the Bowl Locks 2, Volume 2 was good to me. It was a plus 10 unit charge back into the competition, but I did lose 5 on Boston College, but got 4 from Texas, 2 from Purdue, and 3 from Florida State. So Tom is the leader at 14 units up, Chip is at 10 units up, and Barton, I hope you just got 5-star haymakers, because right now he is bringing up the rear at 12 units below even.
So I guess we're gonna have a lot of 5-point picks today.
I've got 1-star, but that's because I'm also caring about the listener. You know,
listen, that's what it's all about to me as well. You know, I'm happy for you guys. You're doing well, but I'm not gonna start throwing haymakers today. I mean, I got some 5-star units, but this is more about, look, if you're still hanging on, I'm going to give you my best effort, and I'm going to give you my true confidence, and we're going to make some money here in this last few days of the bowl season.
Yes, this is what it's about. if your account is still hanging on December 28th, and like, you, no one has either forced you to, like, if you're still alive, man, props to you.
Hey, listen, I've lost $1,000 here or there only to just like quadruple that in a couple days. So this is, you know, this happens from time to time. Got to pay to play.
Right. You know? Yeah. Oh, no doubt.
20 units up on the year. Going into bowl season, had a tough couple weeks.
You know? Hey, all right, Tom, you are the leader. We're going to start with the Cotton Bowl Classic. So lock me up.
We're picking locks.
My blue plate special 5-star locks are coming.
Come get these locks.
5-star master lock. Lock it up.
You want these locks?
I'm living and dying every point, every cover.
My first lock I will start with USC plus 7.5, but it's only a 1-point lock because I am not 100% convinced on anything that's going to happen in this game. I think it's going to be a very good game, and I love the matchup that it's basically just your Rose Bowl, but in Texas. And I my initial reaction, honestly, was when this line came out and Ohio State was a 7.5-point favorite, kind of did that like confused dog head tilt thing.
Right.
Because that just feels like that numbers feels way too big for these two teams. But then the closer I looked at it, the more, I looked at advanced stats and I saw that, okay, so Ohio State probably is considerably better than USC in quite a few areas, mostly on defense. But I still don't think that 7.5 is the right size of a spread between them. I still think USC is much better than that. I mean, if in Ohio State in a conference game, if would they be a 7.5-point favorite over Penn State or Wisconsin? So, and I see USC as being a team that's on that level. And then also, it's at a neutral site. It's a huge bowl game. And this is a USC team that has Sam Darnold. It has Ronald Jones. And while its defense may not be as strong overall as Ohio State's, it does well against the pass. It has a little bit of trouble with the run, but it's not like it's porous and it gets ripped apart on a weekly basis. So I think that this is going to be a lower scoring affair, and I think that because of that, I would rather have the Trojans in the points, especially with that hook. If it were a 6.5-point spread, I'd probably be on Ohio State's side. But at the 7.5 points, I have to take the Trojans.
I looked at this, and I thought that I thought Ohio State's the better team. And I still do not trust this USC team. And I look at, if Sam Darnold does start to, I got to think that Denzel Ward and the back seven, the linebackers and the defensive backs of Ohio State, which they get after it when it comes to trying to bait opposing quarterbacks into making mistakes and then capitalizing on them. And I agree with you, Tom. I love this matchup. I think this game is going to be a ton of fun. But I think that when it came down to having to make my pick, and I'm throwing 3 units on it. It's a little bit of a reckless 3 units as a caution to the listener. But I'm also trying to chase Tom down in these standings. So I'm glad we're on opposite sides. I'm throwing 3 units on Ohio State -7.5. I think Ohio State is the better team. I think Ohio State wins the game. The hook absolutely terrifies me. But it's a gut play here. So I'm going to ride with the Buckeyes.
I think Ohio State is probably the sharp play. I'm with Tom. I looked at it and I was like, well, what the heck's going on? And then, as you think about it a little more, you start to realize, well, shoot, maybe this is a spot where Ohio State is going to run it up on USC a little bit. But I'm going with USC as well. And to me, it's about... Look, I do think Sam Darnold in big games is really good. I do think that in big moments he's really good. I do think that this USC team has been just surviving the year. No bye week, beaten up early, war of attrition, and now they're a little healthier and they've had some time to rest, recover, recoup, regenerate. So I'm going to go with USC. And I do like it with the 7.5. I would be a little more scared at 7 or 6.5, but I'm going to go USC plus the 7.5. I'm going to go. I was 5 units like last night. I've sort of walked this back to 3 units. I'll split the difference. Let me go 4 units on USC.
Some late. You're at the window. And you're like, give me 230 on USC.
You tell me that's not the best approach to have.
All right, let's dig into the college football playoff semifinals. It'll be January 1st. They will start out in Pasadena in the Rose Bowl. Oklahoma going up against the SEC champion Georgia Bulldogs. Hey, the only team to beat every team on its schedule. That's the Georgia Bulldogs for you. There you go. All right, let's get into game angles, betting angles, of course, with this being the Locks podcast. Barton, you first. When you're breaking down this game and when you're trying to make a prediction, what catches your eye first?
Well, Oklahoma's got the best player on the field. And when I started thinking about this game, I started thinking about, I mean, I initially, at the beginning of the playoff pairings, my initial inclination was Oklahoma is my national championship pick. And that was just like my gut reaction because they got the best player in college football. As I began to let it sink in a little bit, marinate on the games a little bit, because my thought process was, look, Baker Mayfield is, you know, if he's the best player in college football, the best player in college football last year was Deshaun Watson, and they were able to upend Alabama. And in 2013, the best player in college football was Jameis Winston, and they, you know, were able to win a national championship. 2012 or whatever Cam Newton's year was, Cam Newton's best player in college football, they won a national title. So there's this element of the best player in the country, if he's at the quarterback position and if he's that good, and I think Baker Mayfield is that good, he can just put a team on his shoulders and go win a national title. But as we've gotten closer to the game and I've thought about it a little bit more, you know, the other thing that is relevant about some of those other guys, Deshaun Watson had the fifth best defense in the country playing alongside him in yards per play last year. Jameis Winston, the second best in the country. You know, and I know I'm talking national titles, but this is, I think both of these games are national title level in terms of the semifinals. Oklahoma has the 69th best defense in the country in yards per play.
Nice.
I think that this Georgia team is going to bring a level of physicality really on both sides of the ball, but I mean, it's particularly on defense, that Oklahoma's not used to seeing. I think they're going to be able to control this game a little bit more, and I think they're going to be able to dictate the style, dictate the tempo better than Oklahoma is used to seeing. It scares me to play it because I just know how good Baker Mayfield is, but I'm just going to – I trust in, you know, look, it's cliche, but defenses do win championships, and I trust in the team that's built better for a championship run, and that's Georgia to me. So I'm going with Georgia minus the 2.5.
Ooh.
Do you want it at 1.5? Are we taking it at 2.5? Or Tom, where do you see it?
Last time I checked, it was 2.5, but it might be 1.5.
Oh, now. No, I'll take one. I'll take 2.5. Let's take 2.5. It's all right. Let's
hold on a second. I can find out really quickly here. Just make small talk.
I've seen it at 1.5, 2, and 2.5.
It is at 2.5.
All right. And how many units?
Five. I'm going to go five units.
Yes.
Five units.
What kind of score do you like? So when you're taking Georgia minus 2.5, it's like that. I hear that, and I hear the way that you dictate the game, and it's almost like, as we've seen several times throughout the BCS National Championship era in particular, like a lot of times, you know, some of these wide open, incredible offenses get into these huge games, and whether they win or lose, the game ends up being like 27-20 or something like that.
That's exactly the score that I always had in my mind's eye. 27-20. And Baker Mayfield can get some yards, but Georgia sort of bows up, you know, when it counts. I like that sort of a game.
All right, Tom, what's your Georgia Oklahoma lock?
Well, if the final score is 27-20, I'll be thrilled because my lock is the under 60 5 points. Mm-hmm. I just think that number is too high, and I think it overestimates what Oklahoma's offense is going to be able to do against Georgia's defense, and I think it underestimates what Oklahoma's defense will be able to do against the Georgia offense. Oklahoma's defense is not great by any regular stat or even advanced metrics. It's pretty average to below average in a lot of areas, but I don't see this as a game where if Georgia is in control and winning, I don't see them scoring 40, 50 points. In fact, there's only been one game all season long in which Georgia played in which the total finished higher than 60 points, and that was against Missouri when it won, like, what, 52-35 or whatever that final score was?
Right.
But that was against Missouri team whose defense was just trash all year long for the most part. So I look at that. I see Georgia, if it wins, it's going to be lower scoring. It's going to be trying to control the clock and keep Baker Mayfield off the field as much as possible. Doesn't that make the most sense? If you want to beat Oklahoma, take away its greatest strength, put him on the sideline, put together long clock control drives, which you can do when you have Sony Michel and Nick Chubb. And then even if Oklahoma wins, I don't think Georgia can keep up. I feel like if Oklahoma is going to win this game, it's going to score at least 40 points, and Georgia doesn't strike me as the type of offense that could keep up with that. So I would see that as being like a 42-24 kind of finish, which would come up. Actually, that would be over, but I just think there was good math in my head right there. But I just think that no matter which way it goes, Oklahoma is not going to score nearly as many points as it did during the regular season against Georgia. Nor is it going to give up nearly as many points as it did during the regular season against Georgia, because Georgia's just a very different kind of offense than what it typically faces, and it's not looking to score 40-something points against you. It's looking to keep you off the field as much as possible. So I think the under is a very safe play here.
What's your angle on the game itself?
I have Oklahoma winning. Yeah. I just rely on that best player on the field. I mean, Georgia's really good, but Baker Mayfield's has been in this kind of situation too many times, and he has shown every single time that, you know, he plays well in these games. This is when the stage is the biggest is when he's at his best, and this is the biggest stage he's played in a few years since the loss to Clemson in the Orange Bowl in the playoff a few years ago. But this is, I think Baker Mayfield's a much different player now. I think he was exciting back then, but he wasn't the efficient and just all-around stud that he is now at quarterback, the kind of guy that makes the plays that he makes on a routine basis with his arm, with his legs, with everything. So I think Georgia's a very good team, and I'm not sitting there saying that it's a for-sure thing that Oklahoma's going to win. I just think Oklahoma's going to win because I think they have the best player on the field, and he's going to have a great game.
One of the shout-out to Michael Felder, Bleacher Report, for this wrinkle, which I think is one of the most fascinating statistical angles to the college football playoffs for either team. Georgia has one of the best third down defenses in the country. They are one of the best teams in the country at showing up on the money down, making the plays, executing, and that's where, you know, you look at a player like Roquan Smith, the rest of those linebackers, and you know that, you know, they are the ones that know where the sticks are and are able to wrap up in space and make the plays. Oklahoma is one of the bottom teams in the country in third down attempted. They don't even get to third down. They don't even have to attempt third downs because they are moving the sticks every single time they snap the ball. I kind of think that there is a very, like, Roquan Smith could, by the way, just be the bowl game, the Rose Bowl MVP. I have like 15 tackles, spy Baker all game, and just prove to be the predatory cat in the open field that he's been all season. Like, I'm very aware of the danger of that. But I think that Georgia's defense has been so good, but it hasn't been really forced to cover from sideline to sideline like Baker Mayfield and Oklahoma are going to make them do. And some of those linebackers and some of those safeties, when it comes to matchups against Mark Andrews, when it comes to matchups against, you know, CeeDee Lamb, Marquise Brown, you know, they're going to be putting sermons down there in the slot. I think that it's a lot of a lot of the slot routes, a lot of those sort of 7-yard slants, you know, you can do a lot to try and game plan away from giving up the big play for sure. But I just see one of these games where, and I got no real good read on the total. My lock here is a 4-unit play on Oklahoma plus 2.5, and the edge is just imagining that, you know, you go through the entirety of Georgia's schedule and, let's see, Mississippi State and Missouri, I guess, are really the only ones that have made those linebackers and defensive backs play out in space. And, you know, Mississippi State was pretty, you know, they played horribly in that game, and Georgia dictated the game running the ball. But I just think that is where the game is won. I could definitely see it being low scoring. I do think it's going to be tight. I think it's going to be fun. I think Georgia plays ball control. I mean, they would love to get 4 yards per carry from Nick Chubb, Sony Michel, and DeAndre Swift all game and just keep the ball out of Baker Mayfield's hands. But even if you do that and Mayfield does have the ball in his hands in the fourth quarter, I think that's how the winning touchdown drive goes down. It's he spreads everyone out, and he looks for the one outside linebacker, the one safety that's just going to be a matchup problem for any of the plethora of skill position players that Oklahoma has flexed out in its offense. So I'm going 4 units, Oklahoma plus 2.5. I don't have a good over-under read, but I generally seem to favor both of y'all's idea that this will be a game where it's a little bit more lower scoring. I just think that Oklahoma, with that firepower, is able to come up big in the fourth quarter.
Trust in Moxie.
Moxie Mayfield. I mean, he's got to. This is, yeah, I don't know. Barton, you've been on Oklahoma all season. I'm shocked that you're going against them now.
Well, look, I'm not seeing the ball very well right now, and I'm second-guessing my instincts a little bit, so I'm probably wrong.
Barton was on Oklahoma as the best team in the country as early as like September 18th. You kept them number one on your ballot too, right? For a long time.
They've been my number one team throughout most of the year. They still have the best win in the country on the road against Ohio State. Still the best player in the country. But this is playoff time. It's like, you know, when you get into the NBA, like playoff basketball or March Madness, playoff basketball is like, you got, you know, the physical teams, you know, that those are the ones that win. This is playoff football. The physical teams are the ones that win, and so I'm taking the more physical team.
All right, let's head on over to New Orleans, the Sugar Bowl, Alabama, Clemson 3. Is it like, where is y'all's? We talked at the beginning of the year about how, you know, Alabama Clemson 3, and there was a columns written, you know, everywhere, every outlet. We talked about it. It was a running theme for at least until Clemson lost to Syracuse, for sure. I feel like as we inch closer to the actual game, and we're, you know, what, just like 4 days away from it. I don't feel the hype peaking right now. Am I wrong? Am I misreading this?
I think that's because we're still lost in the hype of last night's Foster Farms Bowl.
Oh yeah, with Jeff Brohm being able to flex on all of them with his trick plays,
and with his 7 points in the second half.
But this is like, you know, you would have thought, based on the way we were talking about Alabama Clemson 3 in September, the fact that we had that matchup right now in the Sugar Bowl, that it would just, and granted, the news cycle can ramp up quickly, but I'm a little bit curious as to see why, you know, how this game plays out, given the fact that it's kind of, I don't know, I'd like to see it become a classic that, you know, we go on to be like, oh man, of course, like, why didn't we see this coming? But my gut is saying that it's not going to be a classic. My gut is saying that Clemson's just going to go and win this thing. I've got Clemson winning this game. I've got it as a 4-unit play, so I've got them, you know, plus the points, plus 3. It's the way I'm going to punch it in here on the card. And I think that the, you know, Baker Mayfield is the best player, and I think that the Clemson defensive line is the best unit in this college football playoff. And Alabama has the most talented team, but I feel like I haven't, especially even going back to the LSU game, coming down the stretch, I just feel like the Alabama performance on the field, even if they were never out of it really against Auburn, I just felt like I was frustrated with this Alabama team. And being frustrated with the team and not seeing the repetition of success and strong performance over and over again down the stretch makes it very hard for me to trust it. Granted, Nick Saban, you know, that's a dangerous idea to think that Alabama could be pissed off and come into this game with a little bit of an edge. But I tend to think that this game's going to be maybe just a little bit ho-hum. And let's say Clemson, you know, defensively dominated, lower scoring, And I think Clemson wins this game by like 7 to 10 points, but maybe like leads and never trails. Popcorn, who wants it?
I'll go. So Oklahoma has the best player in Baker Mayfield. Clemson has the best unit in its defensive line. The problem is Alabama has the best team. And it has been the best team all season long. And I don't think that losing to Auburn on the road in a rivalry game suddenly means Alabama is no longer the best team in the country. And when I look at the history of these two teams, you know, we mentioned this is the third one. As far as the hype is concerned, I think a big problem is that it's a semifinal and not the title game. But I think the other problem is one of the problems for Clemson in this game, and that's that Deshaun Watson's not on the team. Because if you watch these two teams play the last few years, as good as Clemson is, Deshaun Watson was the guy that was keeping them in these games and giving them a chance to win. And it was Deshaun Watson last year who made those plays on that final drive after Jalen Hurts went down the field to score to put Alabama in front. Here came Deshaun Watson again, leading that Clemson offense, putting the team on his back, getting that touchdown in the closing seconds to knock off Alabama. Deshaun Watson's not around. He was the X factor. He was the guy that balanced things out. And Kelly Bryant has done a great job of stepping in and taking over the offense and putting together a good season. But Kelly Bryant's not Deshaun Watson. Kelly Bryant is not going to have the same kind of success that Watson had against this Alabama defense. Yes, Clemson's defensive line is amazing. It's wonderful. But is the gap between it and Alabama's defensive line that significant?
I think
so. You really do?
This year, I think that this Alabama defensive line is missing. Like, it is like on paper, the blue chips are there. But I think the defensive line has been compared to the way that Alabama defensive line has dominated in 2016, 2015, and 2014. I think it is a dramatic step back.
Metrics disagree. But I just think that there isn't an area on this game where you can look at Clemson's units and say it's significantly better than the Alabama unit it's matching up against. I think that Alabama is better than Clemson in a lot of the key areas. I think that Alabama this year is better than Clemson at quarterback, which is a huge area. I think Alabama is better than Clemson at running back. I think Alabama is better than Clemson on the offensive line. I think wide receivers are pretty much equal. I think defensive lines, Clemson has a slight edge. I think linebackers and secondary, Alabama has a slight edge. But you look across, Alabama is better than Clemson in more areas than Clemson is in Alabama. There's a reason Alabama is a 3-point favorite in this game, even though it's the 4 seed compared to Clemson's 1 seed. So when I look at these two teams all season long, Alabama lost to Auburn on the road in a rivalry game. Clemson lost to Syracuse on the road in a rivalry game.
Oh, sorry. I thought you said rivalry game.
But my point is that Alabama is better than Clemson. Clemson is number one only because Alabama lost to Auburn. Had Alabama not lost to Auburn, Clemson wouldn't be number one. It would be number two at best. It's there on its resume. It's a very good team. I'm not sitting there trying to disrespect it and say it's bad, but it's not as good as Alabama. Alabama was the best team all year. A loss to Auburn doesn't change that. They're going to win this game, and they're going to cover the spread. Alabama -3, 5 points.
Woo! Wow, okay. All right. That's basically what I think too. I've been really back and forth on this game. Like I've week by week, I think it's a different winner, and I still think it's basically a coin flip. Like I still think this is, you could play this game 100 times and you're gonna get, you know, 50 Alabama wins and 50 Clemson wins. But I'm going with Alabama because I agree with Mr. Fornelli, that they're the better team, if only slightly. I think Clemson's got the best unit, but I think Alabama has a better quarterback. I think that they've got some, you know, it's a push or slight advantages elsewhere. And I think this, like, revenge factor is relevant. I mean, this is what they've been building towards all offseason, all year. You know, this is the game that's been playing on loop in the weight room or whatever. You know, that's a motivating factor here. And I think Kelly Bryant, while he's been really good this year, I've been really impressed with the way Clemson creates opportunities for him to be successful, creates easy throws for him, creates just an offensive system that puts him in a position to be successful. I think Alabama has the ability to take some of those spots away from him. So I'm going with Alabama, 3 units. I think Clemson could win this game, but I like the best quarterback on the field in a revenge setting, and I like Nick Saban to have his guys motivated.
I think that there is a, like, of all the possibility, you know, you talk about this game being played 100 times, there are probably like 20 of those simulations where Kelly Bryant gets totally exposed and that's it. Where like a 2-interception game for Kelly Bryant, Clemson can't run the ball, and Alabama wins it in boring fashion 20-10. And Nick Saban would probably want nothing more.
Yeah, and that's another thing too. I've been worried about Clemson since that Syracuse game. I've been worried about Clemson running the football. And I know they get some yards, they get some big plays, but it's not a physical run game this year. And that's against Alabama. You know, I don't know that you can finesse your way in the run game. And that gives me a little more confidence in the Tide.
All right.
Yeah, it's hard to beat Alabama when your offense is a little too one-dimensional.
Yep. No doubt. All right, that'll be that's a lot of lock fighting that will play a big role in determining the winner of the postseason. Let's go back into the bowls. Let's take it to Louisville and Mississippi State. Barton, what are you thinking about here for the Cards and the Bulldogs?
Yeah, I'm going Louisville. Minus what are we at? 6.5 is where I saw it.
6.5. That's what I'm punching in at.
I mean, look, you've got a situation at, like, well, who's coaching this game? I guess like Mullen's not coaching it, right?
I am coaching this game.
like Joe Moorhead's not coaching it. Is this just a bunch of GAs that are coaching this game for Mississippi State? That's like when that's happened in the past, this bowl season, it's not worked out well. Plus you got the Nick Fitzgerald out. Keaton Thompson is your quarterback, who is big and athletic and talented, but he can't throw it very effectively. And I think that Lamar Jackson's going to be able to get, you know, he's going to be able to do some damage. I think Mississippi State's going to have to keep up to a degree. And so while this is a heavy public play from what I can tell on Louisville, I'm on the public side. I'm going 4 units Louisville. I think Mississippi State is going to be one of the best teams in the SEC next year. But this year, given the coaching situation, given the quarterback situation, and given that they're playing Lamar Jackson, I like Louisville.
How many units?
4.
All right. What do you think, Tom?
I am actually on the other side. I am taking Mississippi State plus 6.5, and it's a 5-point lock.
Wow.
There's a few reasons for it. I mean, one is, as Barton mentioned, Louisville is a very public play. So there's definitely the fading the public factor here. But for me, it's just, I think too much of the focus will be on, you know, Mississippi State not having Nick Fitzgerald on offense and there being some question as to who's going to be calling the plays and all that kind of stuff. But I think that overlooks just how good Mississippi State's defense was this year. And while Louisville has Lamar Jackson, the Cardinals this year are more Lamar Jackson and nobody else than last year's team was. Like, I feel like he had more help last year than he does this year, and especially defensively, where Louisville is not very good at all. I mean, if you look at the advanced metrics, they're 88th overall in S&P Plus, but I mean, they're 108th in success rate, 115th in explosion plays, 95th against the run, 109th against the pass, 119th in standard down situations. It's a very porous Louisville defense. So even without Nick Fitzgerald, I think Mississippi State's going to be able to put points on the board. And I think that their defense is going to do enough to at least be able to limit Lamar Jackson and not let him go off and have an amazing game. So I think Louisville's probably going to end up winning this game. It's just, I feel like it's going to be a 31-28 kind of win. And so I'm going to take the 6.5 points with the Bulldogs, and I feel pretty good about it.
Crap. All right. Well, I'm Louisville minus 6.5. It's a 5-star lock. This is one that I'm immediately starting to regret. For some reason in my head, I thought Lamar Jackson danced around LSU last year, and actually LSU totally shut him down.
Oh, no, he didn't do anything in that bowl game.
Yeah.
That was the whole start of Lamar's performance against LSU, and then a couple days later what Deshaun did against Alabama was the whole start of everybody saying, oh, they should have given it to Deshaun, acting like as though Lamar Jackson's entire season before that didn't count.
Yeah, I think Lamar can turn it on. I think that this is, you know, like I did remember from him just dancing around Texas A&M the year before. I think that he can put on a show, and Mississippi State's defense was very good, but I don't know. It's like, if this was 7.5, I definitely would not be 5-star lock, and I would probably look for an over under play on this one. But I think it under a touchdown, if Lamar is locked in, and I do think that he's going to be locked in and he's going to be trying to show off a little bit. Like, I mean, Lamar Jackson is the kind of player who I do think that if he's trying to show off, that's probably a good thing. It's also a bad thing. I mean, he'll probably turn the ball over. But I think that they will end up winning the game. And if I think that Lamar Jackson can lead Louisville to a win in this game, then at 6.5, I'll go ahead and punch it in. But it's a public play. How much of a public play?
Right now, 77% of the tickets are on Louisville.
Shit.
And you don't want to know the money.
Is it like 50%?
94.
Oh. Oh.
Now, that being said, it's still very early. There haven't been, compared to how many bets will be placed on this game by the time it kicks off, there's nowhere near as many as it's going to be at the end, but there's 2,700 bets so far, and it's all on Louisville side.
So that worries me. The public play definitely worries me. It scares me to death. But here's the thing, that the reason I'm less confident in this pick about anything other than the coaching situation. Like, I just scanned this as we've been on this game. And maybe I'm missing a game somewhere along the way, but I just sort of looked at the bowl games this year where there's significant coaching turnover, you know, where they've left a team, basically. Oregon, head coach gone, new offensive coordinator, they lost by 10 points. SMU, head coach gone, whole coaching staff gone, they got absolutely boat raced. UCLA, interim coach, you know, staff outgoing, they get handled. Missouri, offensive coordinator out, offensive line coach out, they get shut down. The only game in the bowl season so far that I've seen, and again, if I'm wrong, you know, point one out, but Florida State blew out Southern Miss despite, you know, an interim staff. But that was just a total talent mismatch anyways. Yeah. So I think the coaching stuff is like, this is proving to be a pretty big deal this cycle, at least. And I tried to do a little bit of research on this, and granted, like, it was very fleeting. I didn't dig in for an hour or anything, but like I couldn't immediately figure out who was even, like, I know who their interim coach is, but I couldn't figure out who was calling the plays, what the staff even looks like. So that to me is the biggest red flag on this game.
It's like when, and especially when some of these new coaches want to go ahead and start hiring their staff, that means that GAs are going to be on the bowl game staff.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Well, they're graduates, so they're smart.
It's just a bunch of people who are looking at Lincoln Riley thinking, that could be me. All right. We're going to go to the Liberty Bowl. Iowa State, Memphis. An over-under of 66. I like Iowa State's pass defense. I am worried that Memphis's own defense will hurt this. But with an over-under of 66, my lock for this game at 4 units is Iowa State and Memphis under the 66. I like a sleepy kickoff. I like a pretty good Iowa State defense. I think Iowa State wins this game, but with the spread right now hovering around 4, this is going to be one of a couple plays for me where I am just so much less confident in the outcome as opposed to the type of game that I'm expecting to unfold. And so I think I'll have to sweat this, no doubt. I believe I'm going to have to sweat under 66 between these two teams. But I think that jumper is just a little bit too daggone high. It'll require a couple of special teams touchdowns, which we might get. Memphis can run some kicks back. But in general, as a principal play, based on the way I think this game is going to unfold, I will take my sweats and for 4 units, punch in at under 66. Barton?
Yeah, I could definitely see the game going that way. And because of that, I'm on Iowa State. I got Iowa State plus the 4. And this to me is about, like, Iowa State, an offense like Memphis's is not foreign to Iowa State. They see them every week in the Big 12. They have had success, you know, shutting down those sort of offenses. You know, they held Texas Tech to 13 points. You know, they held Texas to 17, even in a loss. They held TCU to 7. Like, this is a team that can defend those sort of offenses. And this is their first bowl since, I think, 2012. This is a huge game for the program. And on top of all that, this will be a cold afternoon in Memphis. You know, I just think this is Iowa State kind of weather. And I like Matt Campbell to get it done here. I've kind of been fading Memphis, like, quietly all year, which is a little bit, like, I know a lot of people
stressful.
On that Memphis. I know a lot of people on that Memphis staff, and, like, I like a lot of their personnel. I think they've recruited well. So it's a little bit contrarian for me to be, like, fading them. But I just, maybe it's because I know too much about them. I think Iowa State wins this game.
What's your units?
5 units.
Woo! Tom.
I don't really have great feelings about anything that's going to happen in this game. I just know that I'm looking forward to it. So I'm kind of just taking a Joe Public view of this one, where I just want it to be as fun as possible.
Over.
And that's why I'm taking the over 66 with 1 point. It's not something I feel great about. It's just, as I said, I don't have a great feeling on this game, so I'm just going to root to be entertained. And that's all this pick is based in. It's a very public play.
All right. Take the lead on Penn State, Washington. Tom.
I am taking Washington plus 2, 5 points. I don't think Penn State should be favored in this game. I think that Penn State's a very good team, but it's also a team that kind of faded down the stretch, and I think that even though it won its last 3 games, it did it against really bad teams, and I think that kind of covers up the fact that the Nittany Lions really weren't playing nearly as well in November as they were earlier in the year. And then if you just look at advanced metrics, like, Washington's a better team than Penn State and has been all season. It just, I don't know why it's not getting the same kind of respect it got last year. You know, it was a playoff team last year. Obviously, it won the Pac-12. It didn't do that this year, so I understand why. But I just think that it's being overlooked far too easily in this game, because I think that defensively, it's equal to Penn State. It might even be slightly better in certain areas. Offensively, I think it's equal to Penn State. It might be better in certain areas. So I think that Washington's being disrespected here. I think that making them the underdog is the incorrect play, and I like the Huskies and the points. 5 points.
Do you think that some of that, and I don't, odds makers are smarter than just simple perception, but what about the difference in like bowl performances that we saw? And granted, Washington played Alabama and Penn State played USC, but you know, one of these teams scored a whole bunch of points and the other one didn't score any.
Well, I think that the line probably is just a reflection of the public who hears more about Penn State than they do about Washington. So they think Penn State is better. But ever since Penn State blew that second half lead against Ohio State, they've kind of been on a downward trend, and not like a bad team, but they haven't been nearly as good as they were beginning the season. And they could be. Saquon Barkley's season has gotten, you know, he's cooled down considerably. And there's a part of me that wonders, Barkley's playing in this game. Barkley said in the middle of November, you know, before the season was over, he says, when he was being asked, are you going to play in the bowl game? He said, yes, I'm playing in our bowl game. But there's still a part of me that wonders if James Franklin, knowing that Barkley's going to be leaving for the NFL, how big of a workload is he going to give Barkley in this bowl game? Because I think that Franklin's the kind of, he's a player's coach. He knows, he cares about his players. He knows what Barkley's future is. He knows what's more important to Saquon Barkley right now than this bowl game against Washington. So while I expect him to play, I don't think we're going to see a game where Barkley's getting 20 carries. He'll still be in on kick returns because that's, you know, he's excellent at it. He's going to want to showcase him. I just don't think Barkley's going to get nearly as many touches as he would in a regular season game, or if Penn State had been in a playoff game. So I have to factor that in as well.
I feel like Barkley playing is more of a injury risk to the opponent. The man's just got pounds and pounds of steel on the outside of his skeleton. I don't know, man. I think
that was what I thought too. Like when Barkley said he was playing, I was like, well, of course he is. He's a cyborg. Yeah. Like he's not going to get hurt. I can't envision a scenario where the guy gets hurt. Like he's built to just take any sort of punishment you want to hand him.
What's your read in this game?
I'm on Penn State, you know, but I'm just sort of Joe Public, you know, in general these days, because
sound so down.
I think this game is basically a pick 'em. I think these two teams are, you know, this is a situation where both teams lost their offensive coordinators. I do think that there's a little bit, like Washington doesn't know who's going to call the plays yet, or at least they haven't announced it. Ricky Ronnie at Penn State is sort of, you know, he's been groomed in this the last couple of years. I think Saquon Barkley is the best player on the field. I am sort of one of the all-time Jake Browning haters. I think he could serve one up or two. And I just think Penn State is a little bit better team from a better conference that has been a little bit more battle tested. And I like Penn State here. I'm going to go with Penn State minus the 2.
How many units?
3 units.
All right. I'm a little bit nervous because, as you mentioned, Jonathan Smith, Washington co-offensive coordinator, is off to Oregon State. Joe Moorhead taking the head coaching job at Mississippi State. But the thing that pushed me into an overplay in this game, and I'm punching it in at 4 units, over 55 for Penn State Washington, is that we've got 2 really, really good special teams units with Dante Pettis. And I think Dante Pettis is playing, right? He left the Apple Cup with an injury, but I think he's all good. Dante Pettis on one side, Saquon Barkley on the other. These are all American caliber return specialists. Both players have multiple returns for touchdowns and will, if they don't even score, you know, just will at least get get very, very close to scoring and set up their quarterbacks. I think that Moxie McSorley is going to get out there, start scrambling around a little bit. And I feel like this is a game that ends up getting decided in the 30s. And so, yeah, I kind of like strapping in and just hoping to see some fireworks every single time that ball gets booted in the air. So I'm going Penn State, Washington, over 55. 55 seems low. From one side to the other, a game that I do not expect to be high scoring. Let's talk about some Miami, Wisconsin.
Ooh.
So how many times does the turnover chain come out going up against Alex Hornibrook, Tom?
At least twice.
Yeah. I was thinking 2.5 would be the over-under for interceptions that I'm thinking in this game. I still cannot pick Miami after seeing the way that Miami was playing in – the way that Miami's offense looked in the in the ACC championship game. It was ineffective. It could not get anything done. But I still think that Miami defense, which, you know, that 38 that they gave up a little bit, you know, kind of hides the fact that five possessions in a row, Clemson started their possession in Miami territory. So I like Wisconsin's defense. I like Miami's defense. I like the fact that both Malik Rozier and Alex Hornibrook are probably going to throw some interceptions and turn the ball over. I like the undersweats as a matter of principle. So for three units, I'm locking in Orange Bowl, Miami, Wisconsin, under 45. Give me like a 20-17 final score. One that I will be sweating, but I think that we'll be able to cash that ticket. Barton?
Give me the Canes. Give me the U. They're in their backyard. This is a big game. It's at night. All those elements that are going to make this an electric atmosphere that they respond well to are there. I think Wisconsin is, I mean, I love Wisconsin. I think they're a really good team. But look, Miami's got some athletes on defense, and I don't hate that underplay at all. And I think, I think that to your point, and I hate to harp on the turnover chain, but look, I think that thing's going to be popping out a little bit, and I think that's going to be the difference. I think Miami's going to be able to come up with some big plays on defense, and I think that I think that's enough. And so I think their athletes will get it done. So I'm going with Miami plus. I think it's at 4.5 right now.
Yeah.
You know, one thing I'm interested in seeing, like Wisconsin recruits South Florida. They recruit sort of the Miami rejects, some of the guys that are, you know, a little too small for the Canes, and those guys go up there and do pretty well at Wisconsin. So I'm interested to see if those guys show up and have a big game. I think it'll be a fun game, but I like the team getting points.
That's a spot where I feel like, can't you see Wisconsin having some like 8-play 60-yard drives that end in like a fumble or an interception?
Yeah, but I could see them having 8-play 60-yard drives and in touchdowns too. And so I think that's the difference. Is like, what's can they finish those, and can Miami make them pay for some of those long drives and turn them over a couple times? So I'll go 4 units on this one. I don't love it, but I can't play small ball this time of year.
All right, Tom.
I am on Miami plus 4.5, and it's a 5-point lock for me. I look at Wisconsin, and even though it played better than I expected to against Ohio State in the Big Ten title game, I still look at that game and I see that the biggest problem Wisconsin had, as has been the case a lot of times in its history since it's become a good program, was it had trouble dealing with Ohio State's speed. Ohio State was a much faster team than Wisconsin is. Miami is a much faster team than Wisconsin is, and that's been kind of Wisconsin's Achilles heel. If you want to get down and fight it Wisconsin can beat you. If you just want to run a race against it, Wisconsin has a tough time beating you. And while there's a part of me that worries because Miami's defense is good and it forces a ton of turnovers, but it is its weakest spot is its run defense, where it's not elite. It's just kind of above average. So I do worry that maybe Wisconsin and Jonathan Taylor just kind of grind things out and keep the offense, you know, keep Alex Hornibrook from having to do too much. But at some point, Alex Hornibrook's going to have to make a play to win this game, and Alex Hornibrook is going to turn the ball over. It's just Miami has a fantastic turnover margin, obviously. I think they're plus 15 on the year. Wisconsin has a positive turnover margin at plus 3, but they've turned the ball over 23 times. So I'm looking at a Wisconsin team prone to turning the ball over, going against a team that does a better job of creating turnovers than any other team in the country. It's a team that's faster than Wisconsin. And I just think that Miami getting points in this situation, in what's, you know, essentially like a home game in a way, I can't not go with Miami in the points here. I just can't. 5 points, Canes plus 4.5.
South Carolina and Michigan in the Outback Bowl. Our good friend Ryan Nanny on the field. He's the real winner here. Tom, where are you at with South Carolina, Michigan?
I'm hoping to not watch it more than anything. It doesn't seem like the most exciting game, does it?
But it's perfect. Listen, the Outback Bowl always is that perfect slog of a game on New Year's Day. You're kind of like crawling out of your New Year's Eve haze, and you need Jadeveon Clowney to come knock your helmet off to get you ready for what's going to be coming later.
See, as long as they're just showing replays of that hit on Vincent Smith the entire game, I think it's worth watching.
Over under of 3.5 replays, and maybe it'll all be in one super cut. They might play it 4 times in a row.
And the Texans are out of the playoff hunt, correct? So maybe Jadeveon Clowney's at the game.
Oh, for sure.
Sideline interview. Hey, Jadeveon, this is where you killed that guy. Talk about it.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, it was fun. He's dead. His family the best. But I'm going with Michigan minus 7.5, 5-star lock. I know you guys were big on South Carolina in the preseason. You were big on South Carolina during the season. I don't see it. I don't think South Carolina is very good. I don't think Michigan's great, but I don't think South Carolina is good enough to really hang against Michigan in this game. I think Michigan's a better team. I think Jim Harbaugh is going to want to make a statement here to maybe put a positive spin on what's been a lackluster season for the most part heading into the offseason. I like the Wolverines minus 7.5, 5 points. I'm not going to watch it. I'll just check the box score afterwards.
Ooh. I was big on South Carolina before the season. I was big on South Carolina during the season. I was big on them to be this team. Like, not a great team, but just like a team that was competitive in the East, had a shot at you know, what I think I picked them second or third in the East. Would they finish maybe third or I don't know. Either way, like this game is not a spot where I'm big on South Carolina. I still think Michigan is a more talented team. I think this is Michigan's, we're young. This is our statement for next year. I'm surprised there's not more of the public on Michigan here, but I'll take it. So give me Michigan. Give me 5 units too. I'm going to go minus the 7.5 for the Wolverines.
Yeah. And one thing to mention too, is that while most of the public is on South Carolina, both as far as bets and money goes, the line's getting bigger towards Michigan.
Crap.
Scratch, 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 scratch.
Sorry, I just pulled some units off the table before I had to place my bet. South Carolina, better quarterback, plus 7.5. And what was a bigger play will be 2 units on the record.
Definitely has the better quarterback. There's no arguing that.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm going with South Carolina, the better quarterback. I think that this is I think that Michigan will gladly play this game super low scoring, and it's like a spot where if you're going to give me 7 and the hook, I like Bentley's chances to even take like a non-competitive 14-point game and come kicking in the back door with a late score to lose by 7. Definitely has that feel to it. We'll see.
I would also like to state for the record that I don't think that South Carolina has some clear advantage at quarterback. I think somewhere along the way, Jake Bentley got propped up as this, like, franchise, no doubt, dude. And, like, if you just look at the body of work this year, he's had his moments, but he's had plenty of bad moments, too. And I'm not sure they'd look all that different if Brandon Peters had started day one and built up to this game. I think that Brandon Peters, in fact, wouldn't shock me if Brandon Peters looked better. I think that Jake Bentley has a little bit of like myth to his game, and I want to see him prove it.
We like folklores in the South. You know that.
Yeah.
All right. Did you hear that Jake Bentley is 7'7", 300 pounds, and runs a 4.2 40? He's a god.
I did hear that.
Yeah. Let's go to the Peach Bowl. Shout out to our good friend Jerry Hinnon. He'll be in attendance with the fam. Auburn, Central Florida, and Barton. Have you heard? I have heard that the Scott Frost and the staff is going to stick around to coach the bowl game. Might not be going as swimmingly as I kind of felt like I definitely did on this podcast. Like, kind of shower Scott Frost with some praise. Like, man, he wants to stick around. Like, this is so great. And I've heard it's maybe a little bit more awkward than they imagined. What about, have you heard
I haven't
the same?
Heard that. I haven't heard that, but I haven't looked into it. And I haven't, I've been doing a million things recently. So no, I haven't heard that, but that's interesting.
But, all right, so I'm going to let you take the lead on this game. Auburn, Central Florida, 9.5, an over-under that is hovering around 67.
Well, now I'm interested in what you're hearing on Scott Frost, his struggles in the locker room right now.
No, it's not troubles in the locker room.
I need some color here. I need some background before I make my pick.
I've heard that the around the building, the old staff, which is almost entirely going to be off to Nebraska, double dipping here, along with Josh Heupel, who is trying to get things in place. It's a crowded kitchen.
I can imagine it's incredibly awkward. Not only that, but Scott Frost is out here like picking off recruits
for Nebraska.
Heupel's. Yeah, for Nebraska, and yeah, like I don't know how it works. What are they in
a trailer?
Portable trailer out back where they're doing their game planning, and or does Scott Frost get to stay in the big chair? So yes, that sounds it seems probably like it would be a little bit awkward. But as anyone that's listened to our college coaches press conference podcast knows, I am as big of a Scott Frost fanboy as there is. And UCF, I mean, I didn't do the historical rundown here, but these New Year's Six games with the Power Five team getting in, and there's some motivation at play and some overlooking at play on the other side, and I just think this team is going to be, I mean, this is huge for them. And Scott Frost has stayed on board, and I think they love that staff, and they want to send them out in style, and that staff wants to send these players out in style for what they for giving them the opportunity they have now. I like UCF here. I would like them a lot more if they weren't talking trash about how they have more team speed than Auburn. That wasn't ideal when they started throwing that in the headlines. But this is just that spot. I like UCF plus 9.5, and I got 5 units on it. And this is a trust in this staff and this team.
All right, Tom, what you got?
I have the sneaking suspicion that UCF's going to get the doors blown off it. Now, not enough to make that my bet. It's just when I look at the matchup, UCF's offense has been terrific all year. There's no arguing that. But I don't know what Chip's hearing, but I feel like it has to be an awkward situation where Scott Frost is finishing up Nebraska's, you know, recruiting class before signing day last week, getting all that in order, and then also game planning for UCF's bowl game against Auburn, like going between Orlando and Lincoln and coaching two teams at once seems really hard to do. So I feel like that's got to have an impact on UCF. And then there's just the fact that there isn't a defense in the AAC that even closely resembles.
Oh, you could have stopped after AAC. You just say there isn't a defense in the AAC. Yeah, but I got to keep going.
There is nothing like this Auburn defense in the AAC. You can, with UCF's offense, you could be faster than everybody in the AAC and put up a ton of points. You're not really faster than Auburn's defense. You do not have more team speed than Auburn. Trust me. You're probably at best on par. So I don't see UCF's offensive line having a very good day. I don't see UCF's offense having a very good day. It's just I don't want to take Auburn minus the points because I've seen Gus Malzahn and get in his own way too often on offense to trust Auburn to cover what's nearly a 10-point spread in some places. So I'm taking the under 67 based just on the fact that I don't think the Knights offense is going to have nearly the kind of success it's used to having against other teams against Auburn, which means that total of 67 is way too high. So under 67, 5 points.
Dang, that's the play, but I'm going to stick with my gut. Auburn minus 9.5, 2 units.
We're all over the board here. I love it.
Yeah. I mean, I just, yeah. I kind of think you might be right, Tom. This might not be as a storybook as it looked on December 4th. We'll see. Finally bringing us home, LSU and Notre Dame. Tom, what's your call here?
Another under 51.5, 5 points. I just don't see a lot of points being scored in this game. You know, Matt Canada is going to be trying to call plays, and Ed Orgeron is going to be tackling him on the sidelines, telling him, no, he can't run that play. You're fired. And then on the Notre Dame side, that offense, as great as it was during the first half of the season, has kind of dwindled down the stretch. They haven't really been able to get Josh Adams going like he had been earlier in the season. And I don't think they're going to be able to have great success against this LSU defensive line in that, you know, front seven. So I look for this to be a lower scoring kind of rock fight-ish affair. I'm very much in love with the under 5 points.
Barton?
I went back and forth on this. At first I was like a lock to LSU because Notre Dame doesn't really play that well in these sort of games. I think an LSU sort of gotten better as the years progressed, but this Matt Canada stuff is just bizarre and weird. And he's too good of a coach. I mean, he must be a really unlikable guy. And Ed Orgeron, I'm starting to really lose faith in him as a coach, given that he can't see that Matt Canada is a good coordinator, given that he's not recruiting that well, given that he's losing some coaches. And so I just think LSU is sort of fading a little bit. I think that while they're good on defense, they're not as big as they've been in the past. So I've gone back and forth on this, but I'm going to go with my most recent lean here, and I'm going to go with Notre Dame. I'm going to go 4 units, big offensive line, slug it out. They're getting points. Give me the Irish.
What are we punching it in at?
Give me 4 units.
Plus 3.
+3.
Yeah, I didn't know the point spread because as soon as I saw this game, I was on the under. 3 units. Like, I was like, oh, yeah, let's go.
Yeah.
Under 51.5. I mean, the only way that it ends up getting high scoring is if it's like a really close game at the very end, and you know, both teams just start chucking it around and you get a couple explosive plays. But I don't know. I like this to be a rock fight, like you said, Tom. A lot of punting. All right. We'll I'll update. I'll send an update once we get through Friday's games, so that we know the score all along the way. Again, right now, Tom, our leader, I'm a few picks behind. Barton's got a big ticket here. And Barton, you also have, let's see, we still got from Bullocks Volume 3, we still got some big plays. I mean, you still got, we got 5 on Wake Forest, 5 on Arizona State. That's a lock fight.
I love those two, but I'm gonna lose my Northwestern play. I already know that.
Yeah, you are. That's a lock. All right, gentlemen, thank you so much. We appreciate it. We appreciate you, the loyal listeners of the 24/7 Sports College Football Podcast. This has been a very fun run with the locks. Again, we will be back. I'll probably get these two together so that we can have some preview conversation, breaking down all the different angles to the national championship game. We'll find some prop bets that I'm sure will become available and figure out new ways to dissect it. But the Bull Locks Volume 4 is a wrap. Great job, gentlemen. I appreciate it.
Good luck, boys.